What's up, what's up? Preseason podcast of the year. Back in full effect on Friday night, April 24th, 2015. How y'all feeling? It's Jay Hicks in the Hip Hop Sports Report podcast. I'm here in the studio. Got a big show tonight. I love when I say I'm in the studio. I use that term very loosely, but you know, it's a studio. It's my studio, so I say it's a studio. That's what it is. But here tonight, we have a very special guest, and we're doing a very special podcast. It's actually the third edition of it, the second NFL edition, but we'll get to that in a second. Thank you all for listening, of course. I need you all to do me a solid, though, and please go out to iTunes and like and subscribe to the podcast, rate the podcast, and leave comments on iTunes. That does wonders for our site and our visibility and the podcast visibility. So if anybody is a listener, please thank you for downloading and listening or streaming, however you do it. But then please make sure you go out to iTunes or go on your smartphone or whatever it is and subscribe to the podcast Hip Hop Sports Report on iTunes or on Stitcher, because we're there as well. Of course, you can always find us at hiphopsportsreport.com. And then also, we're on Twitter, of course, at HHS Report, and on Facebook, facebook.com/HHS Report. Had a big week this week, actually. It's not my first time behind the mic, so to speak, this week. I had opportunity to do the Rundown Sports Podcast with my man CL Palmer out of the A, and that was a fun experience, man. Me and him, we kind of got cool over Twitter, and he reached out and showed love, and so I showed love right back. Got to reciprocate that sort of thing, and he invited me to be on his awesome podcast, and so I had that opportunity to do that this week and had a lot of fun, man. We chopped it for about an hour and a half. We even chopped it for at least a half hour off the air, so you know what I mean? So he's a real cool cat, and so please make sure you check out his podcast as well. Not just the edition that I was on, you know what I'm saying? Please check out the edition that I was on. But besides that one, check out the Rundown Sports Podcast. That's capital D-A, capital R-U-N-D. O-W-N, The Rundown Sports Podcast, and you can actually find them at therundown.com, and The Rundown Sports Podcast is on iTunes as well, and they're on Twitter, twitter.com/TheRundownSports, and you can find my man CL on his podcast, or excuse me, on his Twitter as well, is twitter.com/CLTheMainEvent, so thank you for that, CL. Now, preseason podcast of the year, getting down to business this evening. We've been doing a lot of basketball talk of late, of course, and it's only fitting with this time of year. But also with this time of year, you know, it's NFL draft time. And so we haven't really talked NFL offseason a whole lot, because when it's NFL season, we go in. You know, you already know how we get down over here. So we do that, and then when it's offseason, we scale back a bit and we try to focus on basketball. Now we kind of got to turn that page and come back to the NFL draft, y'all, because it's a week from yesterday is the NFL draft 2015 out in Chicago, Illinois. And so I want to bring on our special guest of the evening on the Your Ad Here hotline. This gentleman has been on the podcast a couple times before. I think this is his fourth or fifth appearance, I think, something like that. But this is the third edition of the Mark Draft. Woo! And he's going to be dropping some science this evening about the NFL draft. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome my man, my cousin, my family, Mr. Mark Hicks. How you feeling this evening, Mark?
What's up, cousin? How you feeling today?
I'm always good, man. I'm always good when I'm on the podcast talking to my people and my listeners. So, you know, it's going to be a good night. We're going to have a lot of fun. And basically, I want to give you guys a quick rundown of what we can expect for the program this evening. So basically, the Mark Draft, how this works, for those of you who may have missed last year's edition. Basically, the idea is this. Mock drafts, we see mock drafts everywhere, and mock drafts are dumb, right? We all know that. Mock drafts are meaningless. They're basically, it's bait. It's a clickbait type of news. It's not real news. Half the time, the people that create mock drafts are basing it off no real information or just a bunch of hearsay, and you see them compile a list of picks, and they base it off of nothing really, other than just whatever they feel like at the moment. And then if they're really trying to stir the pot, then they'll just switch somebody to the top of the draft just to do it, because then it'll get people talking, it'll get people checking out their column or their website, right? And then you have other people basing their new mock draft information off of that fictitious information, right? So the whole thing is just ludicrous. And so I think we all know that by now. Like, mock drafts is like, this like the reality television of internet sports talk. You know what I'm saying? Like, that's, it's ridiculous. Like, there's no validity to it. And it's a guilty pleasure. I mean, we all check mock drafts from time to time. I've done it many times before. But it's not something that you should put a lot of stock into. And we all know that. And so I have my man Mark joining us once again for the Mark Draft. And so the difference here being that Mark is going to break down picks 1 through 10 this evening of the NFL Draft. And he's not going to tell us who he thinks is going to go 1 through 10. He's going to tell us what each of those teams picking 1 through 10 should do, because that's far more relevant. How many times have we seen NFL teams screw up in these positions when people sitting on the sidelines or fans, so to speak, those people are, we're aware, you know, intelligent fans, we know what's going on. We know that you should have drafted an offensive tackle when instead you went with a wide receiver. Like, why did you do that? Don't be an idiot, you know? And that's how GMs end up getting fired, you know what I'm saying? So we see these mistakes all the time. So rather than trying to reinvent the wheel or come up with something that's just making up something of like what we know is going to happen, because we don't know what's going to happen, Mark is going to share with us what he thinks each team picking in the top 10 should do. And before we even get into that, Mark, are you going to the NFL draft this year?
Man, listen, I need to shout out to my better half, my wife of almost 18 years, right? I just don't want to tell my age all on, you know, the podcast and everything, but my wife actually, she knows, this is how you know you found yourself a good one, is the fact that she went in and she knows I'm a big, you know, sports buff and, of course, an NFL draft buff. So she went on NFLDraft.com, and they had this contest or whatever to sign up to attend the NFL draft. And basically, you know, it's almost like a random drawing. You and the winner gets an email basically saying you have won two tickets to come to the NFL draft, and they actually picked the day for you. So not only did she get a response, which I didn't even know about the contest. That just shows how much I know. But then on top of that, we got day one. So we're there Thursday night for the first round of the NFL draft. Man, I am so stoked. And, you know, we all have our bucket list. That was definitely one of the bucket lists for me. So I can't thank her more, so I'm shouting her out right now. You know, love you, dear. Appreciate it.
That's what's up, man. Shout out my cousin Tandy. I love you. And thank you for hooking up Mark like that, man. That's special, man. That's love, y'all. That's love. That's black love right there. You see that?
You know what? Also, I just got another email, too. I meant to mention that as well. So NFL wants us to, you know, take pictures of the event and then send it to them on Dropbox. So while I'm there, I'm going to start taking pictures and stuff for them. But also, as I get them, you know, I'll forward some of those pictures over to you. So you maybe, if you want to, you know, post it to your Twitter handle or anything like that, just to try to get, you know, an inside view of some of the stuff that I'm seeing down there. I would love to do that for you.
No, wait a minute now. Wait a minute now. Mark's coming to the table. We got breaking news in the podcast. We are in there. Hip Hop Sports Report at the draft. We are there, baby. We have correspondents. We have a Hip Hop Sports Report correspondent at the draft. Mark Hicks, ladies and gentlemen, stepping up. Thank you.
Anything for the family. You know what I'm saying? Anything for the fam.
Absolutely, man. Well, let's get into it. That's awesome, man. And like, did he just drop that for y'all listening? That's brand new to me. I did not know that. So he just hit me with that right now. So that's dope. And so we're definitely gonna be. We're gonna have to find a way to get those pictures out there. We might do it on Twitter. We might just post them to the site. We'll figure something out for sure. But that's what's up, man. That's gonna be a lot of fun.
Oh yeah.
And so, and we're going to have to check back with you at some point to get a firsthand experience of how the draft works when you're there and how that whole dynamic is. But yeah, for sure. And I think we've wasted enough time, though. I shouldn't say wasted enough time, but we've spent enough time. And let's go ahead and talk about the Tampa Bay Buccaneers drafting first overall.
With the first pick in the 2015 NFL draft, the Tampa Bay Buccaneers select, I don't know who they're selecting, but Mark, who should they select with the number one overall pick?
without question, they should select Jameis Winston of Florida State. And the main reason why I say that, why it should be a slam dunk, is because they still have a lot of holes. You don't become 2-14 without having a lot of holes, okay? But the most glaring weakness on that football team has been their quarterback play. And out of the two quarterbacks that, you know, are listed as, you know, top of the draft type of quarterbacks, Jameis Winston and Marcus Mariota, I like Jameis Winston for two reasons. One, he has athleticism that's off the charts. He has the rocket arm. He has the mobile skills. He's actually a very intelligent quarterback. And when he's right mentally, he is about as accurate as anybody else in the draft. And I think the most important reason why is because, you know, their quarterback play has been downright dreadful, and you can't get any worse at quarterback than the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, unless you know the Cleveland Browns. But we're going to talk about them later. But you know, when you get the quarterback, everything else seems to fall into place. And I mean, this to me is a slam dunk. Plus, he's a Florida kid. He's in Florida and in the state of Florida. I mean, he has the best of everything. So Tampa Bay would be foolish not to take him. He's got all the tools that you need. Yes, he's a knucklehead. I know somebody is saying that right now. He is a knucklehead, and it comes back down to your coaching staff and your locker room. If you have enough veteran presence there and a coaching staff that will get on him to make him the best player that he possibly can be, he is far and away better than any quarterback in his draft class, including Marcus Mariota. So that's who you should take.
Now, there's been a lot of talk with just this, the idea, and we've heard this a lot of different places. If you follow sports and you follow the NFL closely in ESPN, that type of thing, you may have heard this phrase come up frequently over the course of the last couple of years, that a quarterback needs to be the CEO of a franchise. They need to be the chief executive officer. What you don't want is you don't want some of the knuckleheaded things that Jameis Winston has gotten himself into at Florida State. Now, he had a little rape charge or whatever, and that kind of fell apart. And now, I guess the same woman is coming back and trying to get some dough out of him, even though it got thrown out of court or whatever. And so, I mean, let's just take that out of the equation because, you know, as far as we know, he didn't do anything wrong based on how it went down in the court of law, or if it didn't, if he never even made it there. And then you have a lot of the other stuff, the crab leg thing, the hopping on tables, saying vulgar stuff in front of the student union or whatever. All that type of stuff doesn't really jive with what you would want out of your quarterback or CEO. Now, my question, though, Mark, are people making too big of a deal of that? Because I'm not saying that stuff's not important, but what I walk in the walk, so to speak. What I am saying, though, is we've seen Ben Roethlisberger win two Super Bowls, and he's been reckless with women, or he's been accused of such anyways in the past, and he was reckless, damn sure was reckless on that motorcycle. We remember that. We've seen Brett Favre develop drug and alcohol problems during his playing career, even at some points. We've seen, and he won a Super Bowl. We've going all the way back to Joe Namath. Joe Namath was Johnny Manziel before Johnny Manziel existed. You know what I mean? And you can imagine what it would be like if he was playing in this day and age and he won a Super Bowl. So throughout the course of the history of football, we've seen guys with not the most pristine image still win at the highest level. So I mean, how much stock do you put into that? I mean, like, you don't knock Jameis at all, even if some of that knuckleheaded stuff, it might just be just general immaturity that can be cleaned up easily, like with a locker room or whatever. You don't think that none of that stuff is off putting to you?
It can, and especially when you're taking a player of that caliber that high in the draft, but his talent is off the charts, and I think also the fact, which I did mention before, he played in a pro-style offense, which is so key now, you know, because so many colleges run the spread offense, and that when you get a quarterback that actually put their hands under center and not in this spread formation, and they carry the, you know, the tight end packages and everything like that, that's so key in the transition from college to pro. And I think from that standpoint, he is he is a mature football player from a physical standpoint and from a football standpoint. Now, from the mental side, as you was talking about, they are definitely red flags. And you are definitely rolling the dice and taking a risk on a guy who's, whether or not they, you know, you consider them major issues or not, they're still issues. They're still like young 20, 21-year-old kid type issues. Him walking out of the grocery store with crab legs and all that stuff, and him jumping on tables and swearing and acting a complete fool or making a fool out of himself, you know, those type of things, because he is the big man on campus, he to a certain degree has been able to get away with and can get away with it. In the NFL, you're dealing with grown men. You're dealing with people who are trying to put food on the table. They're not going to tolerate some kid coming in there and acting a fool. And they're going to be all over him. And that's why I say it comes back to the locker room. How strong is your locker room and how strong is your coaching staff? You have Lovie Smith there, and for the most part, he seems like an easygoing guy. But to a certain degree, from what I understand of him, he's still – typically no nonsense when it comes to certain things like that, especially coming from a rookie. He's going to have his veterans police the locker room, and they're not going to put up with that stuff. At the end of the day, for him, you know, his talent is so great that if he could just stay on the straight and narrow, and if somebody is actually in his ear trying to, you know, show him the ropes and get him to the point where he can maximize his potential, he's going to be off the chart type of talent. And he has some pieces there with Mike Evans and Vincent Jackson, those type of guys that's there. I mean, they can help him in his transition as an NFL player, but it all comes down to him. It's all about him wanting to be an elite football player. And you roll the dice when you do that as a franchise. You really do. I just think that his talent is worth the risk. I really believe that.
Two more things on Jameis, and then we'll move on. First of all, I really believe that you mentioned that he's a great athlete, and he is a great athlete. I mean, he was an excellent pitcher at Florida State as well. So, I mean, he can sling it, whether it's a football or a baseball. But he's not the most mobile guy. He's mobile enough to get the job done. I mean, he's not Tom Brady or Peyton Manning in the pocket, but he's far from Mike Vick and Aaron Rodgers in the pocket. So he's, you know, I wonder if it's going to hurt him or work to his advantage, the fact that he's not as mobile, because a lot of times with these guys that come out that are mobile, that part of the game comes so easily to them, they don't work on the mechanics of throwing the football, whereas Jameis is a much more polished pocket passer than a lot of those other guys coming out the draft, because he cannot afford to rely on his legs, because they're not going to get him very far. The other thing was that last year, you know, 2 years ago, Jameis went undefeated and won a national championship and the Heisman Trophy. Last year, he, by his standards, considering the bar where he set it, he did not perform all that well. I mean, he threw a lot of interceptions this past college football season, and it makes you wonder, you know. I agree with you, Mark, that he is a very smart player, but I'm not so sure that he is. Maybe his decision making isn't quite there yet, and maybe he needs to grow a little bit more. And on the flip side of that, the quarterback that he's most often compared to, of course, is Oregon's Marcus Mariota, who is projected by many to go number two in the draft. And he's more mobile than Jameis, threw way less interceptions than Jameis in his college career, and it was won the Heisman Trophy this past year. So do you see Marcus Mariota going number two to Tennessee, or do you see the Titans going a different route?
Honestly, I've picks two with Tennessee, three with Jacksonville, and four Oakland are all trade possibilities for Marcus Mariota. I do not think that the Tennessee Titans will take Marcus Mariota. And the only reason why I say that, and this goes back to what I said last year, you know, where I said that styles make fighters, well, systems make quarterbacks. I believe that Ken Whisenhunt's system in Tennessee does not fit the skills of Marcus Mariota. And this is where I come back to the issue with college football players playing in spread-type offenses that really doesn't translate, or you really can't project how they're going to translate to the NFL. And in Marcus Mariota's case, the type of offense that he ran at Oregon, I mean, it, to me, he does not fit the type of offense that Ken Whisenhunt wants to run. Now, over time, as he learns to play the pro style type of offense and that type of thing, getting under center and do, you know, a five or seven step drop, I mean, he could very well be the best quarterback in his class, but it's going to take time with him. And the issue is, if you don't have a system that benefits his skills, he's going to struggle right out of the gate because he's going to have to learn how to read defenses to a certain degree under center. He's going to have to do pre-reads and adjustments because when you're in a spread offense, it's real easy to make an adjustment at the line of scrimmage. It's much more difficult to do it when you're under center in a pro-style system with either two tight ends or a tight end, three wide receivers, that type of thing. It's very difficult from that translation when you really have not done that before. And that's the problem with Mariota. It's not his skills. It's not his athleticism, which is, like you said, a ton better than Jameis Winston's. But the problem is that, you know, because he does not have the elite arm, he is a superior athlete, but, you know, you've seen superior athletes play quarterback all the time, and they trust their legs more than their arms, so they don't wait to see, go through their progressions, and they start running it, you know, the first sign of adversity. That's the issue with Marcus Mariota, and for a team like Tennessee, who wants to, you know, speed this process up probably a little bit quickly than getting a guy who's going to take time to adjust in a pro style offense, and especially offense like Wisenhunt's, I just don't see Tennessee draft him. I think they're dangling him out there. I think that, in honesty, Tennessee wants to trade down if possible. They want to hold a king's ransom for some sucker who's going to go up there and give up their entire draft to get up to two so they can take Mariota. I think that's what they truly want. If they stay there, though, if they stay at two, the best player, in my opinion, is Leonard Williams, the defensive tackle from USC, because he is an explosive football player where you put him in on the line of scrimmage, he can cause havoc, and you can pretty much do all types of different things with him because you don't have to line him up, you know, over the guard or the center. You can actually swing him because he has enough speed and things to, you know, you swing him to the outside and move him, put different positions on the line. And he's disruptive. He's a disruptive force that they haven't had since Albert Haynesworth was there in his prime. So I think if they stuck it to, that's why I think they're going to take. But honestly, I believe they want to trade down. They want to trade this pick to somebody who's willing to go up and get this guy.
To me, trading makes a lot of sense for all the reasons that you outlined. They just tried it with a mobile quarterback there for a little while with Jake Locker, and he was a lot smaller than I think Mariota is, and it didn't really work out there, and Locker stayed getting beat up. The thing about Mariota, man, to me is, and I mentioned this when I was doing podcasts back in January and December talking about the college football bowl season, and I didn't have Mariota beating Ohio State, and I had Oregon losing that national championship game. I think Mariota, to me, I don't see that it factor. I don't. And it doesn't mean that he's not talented. It doesn't mean he won't be successful. And maybe I'm wrong. I mean, I'm not in the locker room with him. I'm not showering next to this dude, you know. I'm not, thankfully, I shower by myself, you know what I mean? So, I'm not there though on a day to day. So maybe people from the Oregon program are going to talk him up, but I mean, I don't see that star quality in him. He looks like a very nice guy, good quarterback. I mean, he's like Russell Wilson, being squeaky clean like Russell Wilson is, but without the leadership intangibles. That's how it appears, and you can't trust that system. I mean, I know people in the know. Seem to believe that Mariota transcends this Oregon system that's been there, that Chip Kelly installed, and I mean, even before Chip Kelly was there, I mean, they were an up-tempo kind of team. Smart people seem to think that Mariota transcends all that and that he's going to be an explosive talent in the NFL outside of that system. I could see that being a possibility, but when you run down all the lists of the Oregon quarterbacks that have failed in the NFL since 99, you had like Akili Smith and Joey Harrington and I think A.J. Feely and Dennis Dixon and, you know, all these cats. I don't even remember them all, but the point is that they flame out in the pros, and so that makes me nervous. I could definitely see Tennessee wanting to trade down, but you believe that Leonard Williams is the smart pick there. Where do you shake out on Jacksonville at three, who, if my notes are correct, This is the eighth consecutive year the Jaguars have picked in the top 10. This is the third straight year they've picked in the top 3. And I believe the fourth straight year they've picked in the top 5. So not only have they had a lot of opportunities, but they have sucked on a lot of opportunities. They have dropped the ball repeatedly, to say the least. So if you were running the Jags, what would you do at 3?
You know you're going to get all the Jacksonville fans running after you again. You know, they get after you every year. But for them, since they draft, and that's one of the reasons why I think that this is a trade pick, trade bait pick as well at 3. If Tennessee doesn't take Mariota, Jacksonville would love to trade out of this pick as well because of the stats that you mentioned. They, you know, it just for some reason when you just keep picking in the top 5 and you just not progressing as a franchise, you know, you got to shake some things. You got to do something different or outside the box. But if they stay at 3, which I and at, in the end it's a possibility, a strong possibility that they will. They need a pass rusher on defense. You know, Gus Bradley has done marvelous things with the defense. They went ahead last year and they drafted a whole bunch of offensive talent, and they grabbed Julius Thomas from the Broncos. They stole him from there, so they're trying to round out their offensive capabilities. Their biggest hole as far as skill positions is running back, but there's nobody worth taking at that spot. So for me, if I'm them, I'm looking at the defensive side of the ball, and though they're real stout against the run and they have some just like some mean people that actually play down there, they still need pass rush. They still need to be able to get after the quarterback. So for me, the two best pass rushers in this draft are, in my opinion, Dante Fowler Jr. from Florida or Shane Ray from the defensive end from Missouri. Those two are, to me, are the top pass rushers in this draft. You could flip a coin. I think if it was me, though, if I'm taking between the two, I'm taking Dante Fowler from Florida. He's probably could be one of the most explosive players in this draft. And depending on the team that he goes to, if he goes to someplace like Jacksonville where Gus Bradley's a defensive guy, I think he will excel in that system. And I think he will blow the roof off of opposing quarterbacks, and I think he will just add a whole new dimension to that defense. So that's who I would take is Dante Fowler.
I think that's what they're trying to do there, and they wouldn't have brought in a defensive coach if they weren't trying to improve that defense and go defense first. And they're in a division where they're going to have to deal with Andrew Luck every year, so they're going to have to stop. They're going to have to stop Andrew Luck every year, and so it makes sense that they would want to shore up that pass rush. Something you said And talking just a minute ago was that they need help at running back, and you said there's nobody worth taking at that spot. Now, I wrote an article, there was a column on Hip Hop Sports Report not that long ago about how the notion of the death of the running back position has been greatly exaggerated, and I firmly believe that. I don't believe that running backs are nearly as worthless as people make them out to be. In this day and age, I mean, people want to focus on the passing attack. Obviously, the whole league is pass happy at this point, but that doesn't mean that you can't get it done with the ground game. You look at the Seattle Seahawks, they've gone to 2 straight Super Bowls by pounding the football on the ground. You look at the San Francisco 49ers, prior to this year, they went to, I think, 3 straight NFC Championship games and 1 Super Bowl, and they came within 1 play of winning it by pounding the football and being a run dominant team. If everybody's going to zig in the passing direction, sometimes it might make more sense to zag and go into the little ground to pound direction. Are you totally against the idea of taking a running back maybe in the first round like some people are? Are there certain positions even, if you're running a franchise, which is the whole premise of this show, if you're running a franchise, Mark, is there any position that you would not take in the first round or in the top 10? Like, you just absolutely not, I'm never taking this position at this spot in the draft.
No, to answer your question, no. And if that person is head and shoulders above everybody else in their class, or if there's somebody who has off the charts production to the point where you just can't pass this guy up, then in my opinion, no. There's no position in this draft or in any draft for that matter where you can't take a player in the top 10, probably except, you know, like, center maybe. you don't want to do the kickers and punters or anything like that. But I'm thinking from a pure, you know, defensive line, offensive lineman, skill position type of positions that are in the NFL draft that's usually, you know, drafted in the first round. If that person is head and shoulders above everybody else, you have to take them. However, you know, we talked about this before about the running back and how and how depreciated in value it is. Guys like Trent Richardson has really killed the value of the running back position up high and early. But when you, as long as you start getting in premier talent at that position and they start performing and producing, then you'll see the value of the running back go up. In this case, when you're talking about guys like Todd Gurley or Melvin Gordon, I believe both of those guys will be drafted in the first round. Because of Gurley's injury history, he did get cleared from the medical doctors as far as his health from that aspect. So I think people are more likely to take a risk. I don't think that he or any other running back at this point is top five material yet. I do think, though, there is a possibility he could be drafted in the top 10, and there is definitely a possibility that he'll be drafted in the first round, him and Melvin Gordon alike. I think that those two are just so – the talent is so premier, and it just depends on what you're doing as an offense, and one of those guys will be drafted early, and the other one will be drafted somewhere in the first round. I don't think either one of them gets out of the first round.
I'm on record as saying that I'm a Gurley man. I'm a Gurley man through and through. I've been a Gurley man for 2.5 years, man. I'm not afraid to say it. I'll say it again. I'm a Gurley man. That's my dude. That's my dude. I love Todd Gurley, and I think he's the truth, man. Now, I don't know what he's going to be as a pro simply because of the way these offenses are structured these days and coming off that injury. I mean, a lot of guys come back from that injury now, the ACL thing, but I'm hoping he's successful because he's been my favorite player in college football just about for a couple of years now. And I think Melvin Gordon is also an excellent tailback. And I can see both of them doing damage, man. And speaking of doing damage, you mentioned Trent Richardson. You said Trent Richardson killed the value of taking running back. Trent Richardson didn't kill a lot of things in his brief time in the NFL. He didn't kill his own career. He didn't kill the careers of Brandon Whedon. He helped kill the careers of Joe Banner and Mike Lombardi. He didn't kill the career of Ryan Grigson, I think, who's the GM of the Colts, I believe, that traded a first round pick for him. He's yep. killing a lot of stuff these days. He's, you know, I mean, we had to start calling him John Rambo or something like that. He's out here murking everybody. There are no witnesses.
Without question.
Yeah, but anyways, hopping back into the top 10, man. The Raiders is number 4. They, like the Jacksonville Jaguars, the Raiders always seem to be picking in the top 5. They got a new coach also, Jack Del Rio, and they had a good year last year considering, I should say they had a good year with their quarterback. David Carr was their late first round, early second round pick last year, and he turned out to play pretty well for them. And people make fun of the Raiders for always picking these flashy guys. You know, they go for speed only and all that Al Davis stuff that was going on when he was alive. They haven't really done that since Al Davis was alive. Since they drafted Darius Hayward Bay, that was about 6 years ago, was the last time they did anything flashy with their first round pick. They've been drafting guys on the defensive line because they drafted Khalil Mack last year. He had a very solid rookie campaign. So, Mark, you're running the Raiders. What say you at number 4?
To me, and I agree with you about Derek Carr, we talked about him last year. He was one of my favorites as far as quarterback was concerned, besides Teddy Bridgewater. And I think he for what he's done, I think he's really excelled, considering the amount of talent or lack of talent that was on the offensive side of the ball last year for them. So for me, you know, when you get a quarterback, when you actually find an answer who you believe is the answer at quarterback, you got to surround him with weapons. They don't really have enough weapons around him. So for me, it's got to be wide receiver. You got to give him a target. The two best wide receivers in this class, although this class is not as good as it was last year because last year's was off the charts and outstanding of a class of wide receivers. It's not like this crop of wide receivers is garbage. I think it's very very good group of wide receivers. Last year was just, you know, one of those anomalies. You know, you just never see that type of talent that was in the draft last year. This year, you got Amari Cooper from Alabama, and you have Kevin White from West Virginia as your two top wide receivers. For me, you know how much I like Sammy Watkins from a physicality standpoint. This year's quote-unquote Sammy Watkins is Kevin White from West Virginia because of he, like Sammy Watkins, he's a physical guy. He runs a 4.3 40. He does need work with his route running. That's without question. So it depends on what type you're looking for in a wide receiver. I think for them, you need a guy who can just go after the football. And his measurables and everything are off the chart. He catches a lot of balls. He doesn't drop a lot of balls. I know Amari Cooper, he has, you know, sudden case of the dropsies every now and then. That's not a big deal to me for him because it's more about when you drop the ball as opposed to, you know, the number of drops. So, but for me, for the Raiders and a true home run hitter for Derek Carr, to me, Kevin White is the guy that I would draft it for.
Well, as I pointed out, the Raiders did go defense last year. And in free agency, they went out and picked up Michael Crabtree. So Michael Crabtree just hop, skip, jump over the bay, and now he's in Oakland. You know what I'm saying? And so you pair Crabtree with – and not to say Crabtree's the greatest receiver in the world. He's never been as good a receiver as he thinks he is, but he's pretty good. You right. Put Crab with Kevin White. Now that's a pretty formidable tandem to throw up there with your second-year stud, Derek Carr. I mean, that's not a bad look for them. So I could definitely see the Raiders – doing some good things with that group. And so, and we went 2 through 4 so far, and you don't have anybody trading. If you were running these franchises, you wouldn't pull the trigger on any trades, it doesn't sound like. At least the trade down. It doesn't sound like. It sounds like you'd rather stand pat and take those guys rather than do the Mariota thing. And there's just been this crazy rumor about Phillip Rivers that popped out of nowhere within the last couple of weeks, man. I thought, here's my thing, man. If Phillip Rivers is available, I'm probably going to go after him. I don't know how much I would give up to get him if I'm any of these teams that needs a quarterback. Because you got to think, like, how many teams in the NFL have a better quarterback than Phillip Rivers? It's probably not 10 teams with a better quarterback than him. You know you need a quarterback to win the Super Bowl, right? Then you got to figure, well, he's, what, 33, 34 years old. But in this day and age, quarterbacks are playing longer. So you figure he might play close to elite or elite-level football maybe for the next 4 to 6 years, possibly, if he plays up till he's close to 40. And so if you're telling me that I'm going to get 4 to 6 years of Pro Bowl quarterback, all-pro quarterback, especially if I'm just missing that one piece, like kind of like the St. Louis Rams were before they went out and traded for Nick Foles, like if I was in that position, then yeah, I'm trying to deal with Phillip Rivers. So, I mean, or even like the Browns, and we'll touch on the Browns a little later. But, I mean, the Browns, people are rumored that they're going to try to trade up. I saw a rumor that the Browns are going to trade for Sam Bradford. I'm like, God, no. But I'm saying if the Browns are to trade up to get Mariota, and Tennessee's willing to do that because they know they got Phillip Rivers in the bag, and then they're going to use those picks to get Rivers or something like that. Like, if I'm the Browns, why not the Browns just trade for Phillip Rivers? But I don't know. I digress. You know what I'm saying? Let's get back to the top 10 because, you know, we don't want to take up too much time because we got to get through these picks. Watch the Redskins. This might be the make or break year for RG3, man. And they haven't had a first round pick since 2012 because of that RG3 pick or that RG3 trade, I should say. And so if you're working for Dan Snyder, I'm praying for you. But besides that, how would you attack this draft?
Well, Washington, for the most part to me, their defense has been horrific. And most importantly for me, their pass rush has been horrific. So just looking at the roster in general, they have some guys, but you know, they have a lot of, in my opinion, overpriced guys, and they're not getting much bang for their buck. In a draft here that has some elite pass rushing type of talent, I think they need to address the defensive side of the ball. You know, they can do defensive back, which they definitely have a glaring hole at. or they can do, defensive line or that type of thing. To me, I just think that for whatever reason, and Dan Snyder, for whatever reason, is going to find a way to screw this up. But I think that they need to draft another pass rushing specialist. So at this point, Dante Fowler is already gone. So to me, the next guy is Shane Ray. And if I'm Washington, I'm taking Shane Ray at 5. There is a possibility about Vic Beasley from Clemson because he's, you know, not too far. He's in ACC country, and they've probably seen him a lot down there. But to me, I like Shane Ray. I like his ability to get after the quarterback, and I think he would do well in that type of a system. So that's who I would go with at 5.
What's funny about Shane Ray, and I've seen him – It looks like Shane Ray's been dropping, and again, this is mock draft, so take it for what it is, but it looks like Shane Ray's stock has kind of been dropping of late. I feel like he was in most people's top 10 beforehand, and lately it seems like he's kind of been slipping a little bit. I've seen him going late in the first round now in some drafts. What's funny about him, too, was that the last game I think he played in college, he got thrown out of the game. And the last elite pass rusher that we saw come out of Missouri was Michael Sam. And Michael Sam didn't really light the world on fire. So, I don't know.
Yeah.
Got you motherfuckers. Yo, I stand alone in this cold world. Could you believe that? I see some good men get blown over G-packs in the Bronx, where it's known to hear the heat clap. And live niggas get it on with the D-Tex. Shit, my life's legendary. If I wrote it all down in a book, it would be very scary. What you know, 16 Beamers and Benzes. Rope chains down on my dick, the beast look tremendous. Me and my niggas pimp hoes and bitches. Back then when I wouldn't even pose for bitches. Ayo, you can ask Dapper Dan, who was the man back in 88. Every other week, trick, 30 grand. Even my bitches wore Gucci and Louis. My beats are ready in the crowd, looking for groupies to screw me. Exit the club, bout to cruise up the block now. With the time, stay frontin' with the top down. See me in that new thing with my fiance. Ass so fat, making you say muchos grande. Don't blame me, blame them, the white folk, for giving me 10 mil for possessing the tight flow. Whoa! Gone with that wax shit. Heard you walk the dorm in a thong on your last bitch. Joey Crack is the most official. Tote the pistol for those who oppose the issue. I hope I convince you to pack up. We need knacked up. Believe me, I can easily get your ass touched. And that sucks. Ain't nobody fucking with this. Pull a move and make you drink a bucket of piss. For running your lips. Got the fifth stuck in your ribs. Don't make me splash your lungs right in front of your kid. I'm a basket case. Don't ever give this bastard space, or I'ma have your ass erased. I'm from the Bronx, I'm up Corral Caps. We love it, this rap shit, but still don't get enough props. All I hear is gangsta, you ain't built like that. Don't make me have to pull a tool and really tilt your cap. I'm from Krills to crap, you been dealing with rap. You ain't never run the streets, now I'm revealing your act. What the fuck?
6 through 10 on the mark draft. Keep it moving, keep it moving. The New York J-E-T-S Jets full. Shout out to Spitta. Let me tell you something. The Jets, they took a page out of the Redskins book. Why anybody would take a page out of the Redskins book is anybody's guess. But the Jets won free agency. They signed Darrell Revis back. They signed Antonio Cromartie. They signed Buster Screen from Cleveland. They signed James Carpenter, a guard that used to play for the Seahawks. They signed Stephen Ridley from the Patriots. They signed quite a few names and quite a few people that people done heard of, and they spent a lot of dough this past offseason. So if you're running the Jets, I got to figure you go offense here, because especially all the Jets draft picks the last few years have been on defense. I touched on that last year on the Mark draft. And then they went out and spent all this money on free agency on a bunch of more DBs because they know they got to defend Tom Brady somehow.
Impossible.
What would you do if you're running the Jets?
Well, for me, I know they got Percy Harvin over there and Eric Decker at wideout. To me, I don't think Percy Harvin, even though he may not believe it, I don't think he's a starting wide receiver in the NFL. I think he is a slot guy. I think he's a nightmare as far as mismatches on third downs and three wide receiver packages and subsets and stuff like that. So to me, they need a true number one guy. Eric Decker's the number two, at best. They need another weapon for whoever plays quarterback, whether it's Geno Smith or somebody else. In my opinion, if I'm them, I'm taking Amari Cooper. Whoever's left between Kevin White and Amari Cooper, that's the guy I'm taking, because they need a true number one wide receiver. And honestly, you know, Geno Smith does some stupid things with the football at times, but honestly, you can't really grade him on how good or bad he is, because he's truly does not have enough weapons on offense. But I think if you put somebody like Amari Cooper, who's a route runner, who reads defenses, who can make big time plays, I think that will help him out immensely in his maturity as a quarterback. So for me, like you said, they spent so much money on defense, they have to go offense. There is a possibility, in my opinion, though, that they may go offensive lineman in this one. And for my bang for my buck, Brandon Shreve is the best offensive lineman in this draft. Not necessarily because he plays tackle, but I think he will be a very good right tackle. But I think he will be a Hall of Fame type of talent at guard. So if I wouldn't be surprised if they went ahead and drafted Brandon Shreve and actually drafted him and moved him into guard. And I think he will excel there. I think he will actually be better at that position than at right tackle. But, you know, for me, especially how big of a gaping of a hole that they have in the skill position set, because they still need that number one guy, Amari Cooper is the guy for me with the Jets.
So here's my thing on Cooper real quick, and it's nothing really bad. I think he's a phenomenal talent. I think he's a terrific route runner, because watching those Alabama games the last several years, he's just always running by himself. And I never, for the life of me, I never understood it, especially this past year, because Alabama's offense was, I mean, they had some talented running backs, don't get me wrong, but their passing attack was not all that great between Blake Sims and anybody else not named Amari Cooper. And so when he was hanging with Mr. Cooper, everything was gravy. And when he wasn't, you know what I'm saying, their passing attack was lacking. And I just feel like, you know, if you double Cooper or do all you can to take him out of the game, then you're going to beat Alabama or have a good shot of doing it. That's what Ohio State did. Cooper caught two TDs, but I think he had less than 100 yards in the Sugar Bowl. And so but he reminds me of a Marvin Harrison, Reggie Wayne type. And I just wonder, like, those guys are great route runners. They weren't the fastest guys in the world, and I don't think Amari's the fastest guy, and he's definitely not the biggest. I wonder how much is he going to succeed. I think he's very good. I just don't know if he's going to be as good of an NFL receiver as he was a college receiver. Quickly, to the Chicago Bears, number 7, Kyle Fuller was their pick last year in the first round. He turned out to be a pretty good player. The Bears, man, they're like the opposite of what we've seen from the Jets in Washington. They're no-nonsense, pretty much straight up and down across the board with their free agency and their recent draft picks. Not a lot of trades, not a lot of big splashy moves and nothing like that. I think the Bears might have got rid of the GM, though, recently. I'm not sure about that. But at any rate, if you're running the Bears, what do you do at 7?
For me, their biggest hole right now for me is their defensive back. You know, Charles Tillman is gone. And even though they drafted Kyle Fuller, for the most part, I think he still needs help. I think he could be a very good, very, very good corner, but I don't think he's the quote unquote, as we like to call them, shutdown corners that, you know, everybody, you know, wants every team to have. And because of the fact that, you know, that Charles Tillman, who's been their rock, you know, for years over there, and their hole is gaping over there in the defensive backfield. To me, I'm taking the best defensive back out there, and that's Trey Waynes from Michigan State. And I think he has the physical tools. You pair him with Kyle Fuller, and I think, you know, from a defensive side of the football, and you gotta look at John Fox. You know, John Fox is gonna try to emulate what he did. You know, he took Bradley Roby, which, you know, I thought he was toast time every time, you know, the year before at Ohio State, and he turned out to have a decent year last year. But I think it's predicated on the rest of the defense around him and the fact that you have another solid corner on the other side. So for the Chicago Bears, they need another corner, and Trey Waynes, is the guy that you need to draft.
Michigan State, they keep a good cornerback, man. They're not quite Virginia Tech, but
they're not Virginia Tech.
Look, that's defensive back university. They got a DB coming out in the first round every year, I guess, except for this year maybe. But Michigan State keeps a good corner though. So Trey Waynes to the Bears at number 7. Number 8 is the Atlanta Falcons. They fell off the cliff last year, to say the least. Good God. They went all in on Julio Jones a few years ago, trading up with the Browns and getting him because they thought he was going to be the difference maker between them and the Super Bowl, and they didn't get there. And I feel like that hurt them the last couple of years because they needed to keep building, and they didn't have the first-round talent to do it. And part of it was because they made the deal for Julio. So, and Julio hasn't been all that healthy. So the Falcons got a lot of holes, especially on defense. They lost Harry Douglas in free agency. They lost Steven Jackson and Jacquizz Rodgers, I believe. I think Jacquizz went to the Bears. So if you're running the Falcons, what are you doing up there? If you're Thomas Dimitroff, isn't that his name? If we fire Thomas Dimitroff today and we hire Mark Hicks, what are you doing at number 7? Or number 8, excuse me.
You're looking at the defensive side of the ball. That's been their biggest problem for most of the year. I mean, they've had the ability to score points. But whatever, even with not a great running game, they still had the ability to score points. Their problem was on the defensive side of the ball. They couldn't stop anybody. And most importantly, they couldn't get enough of a pass rush on the opposing quarterback. And for me, you know, you can go D-line. Or you can go linebacker. It all depends on what you're looking for. If I'm going D-line, I'm going Randy Gregory at defensive end. If I'm going linebacker, I'm taking Vic Beasley, outside linebacker. So it just all depends on what you want. For me, Vic Beasley is more explosive, in my opinion, than Randy Gregory. Randy Gregory is a much stronger individual. I think, you know, you need to put pressure on the quarterback and you need some flash. Vic Beasley is the pick at 8 for me.
Vic Beasley. Oh, he went to Clemson, I think, right?
Yes, he did.
All right. So Vic Beasley at number 8. I got him penciled in as an Atlanta Falcon. Number 9 is the New York Football Giants. I still think Eli Manning's whack. I don't care what y'all say. But he's still their quarterback, and Tom Coughlin, I guess, is back for another year. So they're going to fire this thing up again. And this is about the time where the Giants turn things around and all of a sudden get good again. So you got to watch out for them. They did go out and get Shane Vereen. They siphoned off a man, Shane Vereen, from the pack. I don't know what – you know, the Giants are notorious for going defensive line high or in the first round of drafts. Where do you see them going with a nice pick? Or what would you do with a nice pick?
What I would do with the 9th pick, their biggest hole is defensive line. They've been battered and bruised. They have, you know, people running all over them. In that division, at the time, they had Shady McCoy. They had DeMarco Murray. I mean, and even dude from Washington. For whatever reason, I can't remember his name. But those guys were running all over the Giants' defense all the time, all day, every day. They need to be stout up the middle. They need somebody who's a run stuffer. Best run stuffer in this draft, without question, is Danny Shelton from Washington. That's the guy that I want because he's going to take up blockers. He's going to penetrate. He actually is going to make moves and try to get a couple of sacks in between. But he's going to cause havoc inside, and it's going to stop the running game. That's the guy I would take if I'm the Giants at number 9.
Seems like a smart pick, Danny Shelton, 9th overall out of Washington. Going to New York and doing this thing with the Giants. Number 10, and keep an eye on the Giants, man. I just, because I rock with Tom Brady so heavy, and because the Giants kind of have the Patriots number, and they play them this year, I believe. I'm just a little nervous. Anything that comes to the Giants, they kind of get on my nerves, so I'm a little nervous about them. But anyways, number 10, the St. Louis Rams, who, you know, the Rams are on the come, y'all. And I don't know if you noticed, you know, obviously, I think it's safe to say that 49ers are going to be whacked this year. I had them missing the playoffs this year, coming into the year, and they did miss the playoffs. And if there's one team that looks like they're on the rise, man, it's St. Louis. I think I'm not a Nick Foles guy, but I applaud them for getting rid of Sam Bradford because I think Sam Bradford's whack. Or at least he's not. I mean, I just don't see anything special with Sam Bradford. I think he's, when he's healthy, which is only 40% of the time, it seems like, when he's healthy, he's serviceable. You know, he's better than, he's maybe slightly above average at best, but that's not going to get it done in this league. And I don't know that Nick Foles is all that much better, but I think Nick Foles has proven that he can play on this level, and he's not, he doesn't have the injury history that Sam Bradford does. So I like that move for Foles over Bradford. They got Aaron Donald last year on the defensive line, and he won Rookie of the Year, and that was on a defensive line that already had Robert Quinn and Chris Long. And they already, I mean, recently they drafted Ogletree on defense. I mean, this team, they have all the makings, man. They got Trey Mason last year in the third round, even though he slipped too far. And so, Mark, what do you see them doing right now? Because I think they're really close. This team is really close to making a serious move in the NFC.
I think their biggest move was getting rid of Suspect Sam. You know, everybody, you know, you used to call Fred Taylor, you know, Fragile Fred. Well, Suspect Sam in St. Louis. I'm glad they got rid of Suspect Sam because, I mean, he was killing this football team from actually taking it to the next level. And Nick Foles may not be that much better than him. The biggest thing is, yes, he can play in the NFL, number one. And number two, he can stay healthy. That's been his, for the most part, that's been his biggest come up. And he had, you know, some problems last year with Philly, but I think that was one of those fluke things. I think for the most part he's been healthy, and it seems like Suspect Sam, he gets hurt, he gets a hangnail, and he's out for 6 weeks. So that was the biggest move before this draft. So for me, I got to protect him, and it seems like every single year we're talking about the offensive line for the St. Louis Rams, and they drafted Greg Robinson last year. I thought they should have went with Matthews, you know, and I think they blew that pick to a certain degree. It's still time, though. He can still, you know, maximize his potential. But they still need a guard, or if they want to get a tackle, they can swing Robinson to the inside and let him progress naturally. For me, the best offensive lineman in this draft, and we talked about him before, is Brandon Shreve. If he's not picked by the Jets, he's definitely going to go to St. Louis at 10. Because he is, like I said, he can be a very good right tackle, or he can be a Hall of Fame or dominating type guard. And if you put him at guard, and you put him next to Greg Robinson, who has struggled at times, but you put him over there with him, and the two of them grow together, I think they will be a fine tandem. So, to me, Brandon Shreve is the guy at 10 for the St. Louis Rams.
So we'll recap the top 10 right now. Jameis Winston, number one overall to the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, if Mark was running the Buccaneers. Number two, Leonard, I like to blow trees in my spare times, Williams. Number two to the Tennessee Titans, Dante Fowler. Number three to the Jags. Let's see, we had Kevin White going number four to the Raiders. Shane Ray, number five to the Redskins. Amari Cooper, number six to the Jets. Let's see, Trey Waynes, number seven, to the Chicago Bears. Pairing him with Kyle Fuller, number eight. We had Vic Beasley going to the Falcons. Danny Shelton, number nine, to the Giants. And Brandon Shreve, number 10, to the St. Louis Rams. Now, Cleveland Browns, your team, my team, America's team, right? No, not really, but still. I love the Browns, you love the Browns. Our family loved the Browns. Your brother got season tickets to the Browns. I mean, we're Browns people. The Browns have two picks in the first round. They pick 12th, which is their own, and they pick 19th, which is from Buffalo, from the Sammy Watkins trade last year. I, for one, am highly pissed that pick is not higher, because Buffalo wasn't supposed to be that good last year. They were supposed to stink, and we were supposed to have a top 10 pick from Buffalo in addition to our own pick, but Buffalo had other ideas. So 12 and 19 for the Cleveland Browns. they made a lot of headlines in the offseason for a lot of wrong reasons, which is par for the course for the Cleveland Browns, I'm sad to say. And they got the new uniforms and all that. Okay, that's cool. But it's about the players that are in said uniforms. That's what's going to make the difference. So, with all that being said, Johnny Manziel coming back off of rehab, still sitting courtside at Cavs games, make that of it what you will. But those two picks in the first round for the Browns, and they've blown two picks in the first round before. We saw it with Brady Quinn and Joe Thomas. Only one of those worked out. We saw it with Brandon Whedon and Trent Richardson. Neither one of those worked out. We saw it with Justin Gilbert and Johnny Manziel last year. Neither one of those worked out. What are the Browns doing with these two picks? And I remind you, Mark, you did not have Marcus Mariota going in the top 10. So tell me, if you're running the Browns, you're making our family proud. And what are you doing with those two picks in the first round?
Well, here's my thing. In reality, I think that Marcus Mariota will be selected in either 2, 3, or 4 of the, on the draft on Thursday night. For me, if I'm any one of those teams, unless I get a king's ransom for him, I'm taking the guy that I want, because the guys that I selected in those positions, you know, they are definitely what they need. So I'm not just going to trade the pick just for the sake of trading and help some other team out. I'm going to get fat off of that deal. So let it be said that Marcus Mariota will be drafted in one of those three spots. It's just a matter of which team is going to get the king's ransom for it, or which team is going to be stupid enough to trade up and get him. One of those teams could very well be the Cleveland Browns. I think personally that's a dumb move for them, because, you know, if they were to draft a Teddy Bridgewater like I wanted them to last year, they wouldn't have to be worried about trying to find a quarterback this year. Okay? Let that be on the record right now. That if they drafted Teddy Bridgewater like I mean, cause honestly, last year, the way everything set up, I liked what they did. From a first round standpoint, they traded down. They got a first round pick in doing so. They went to Mike Pettine, who's a defensive guy who runs that press corner type of scheme, and they needed a corner. And they drafted who they thought was the best corner on their board, which was Justin Gilbert. Then they dropped down, and with the other pick that they had, and they was looking at quarterback because Teddy Bridgewater, Johnny Manziel was still on the board as they were dropping down. In my opinion, they should have taken Teddy Bridgewater at that point, because they were lucky enough to have him down there, and they didn't. So, but they took Johnny, you know. And I honestly don't think they really understood the ramifications of character and attitude with those two picks. If you look at the rest of their draft, they did very well last year, in my opinion. But those two picks stand out, and in this, they're in the same situation now. If I'm them, I honestly think that Marcus Mariota will be off the board by that time. If Marcus Mariota is there, they'll run to the podium and grab him. That's just, I mean, Ray Farmer liked this guy. He was hoping he was coming out last year. They're going to run to the podium and get him. Okay, but for all intents and purposes, if he's already gone and the board changes from what I previously stated in the top 10, to me, their biggest hole is on the offensive side of the football. And most importantly for me, their biggest hole is at wide receiver. You got, you know, pot smoking Josh Gordon. You got a whole bunch of mini Smurfs, and you know Miles Austin, who had a somewhat decent year, is gone. You're gonna need, whoever the quarterback is gonna need some weapons. The best weapon at this point in time at 12 is Devontae Parker from Louisville.
And I'm pumping my fist. I'm pumping my fist, Mark. That's my guy. I love Devontae Parker.
That's the guy that I want. I'm almost positive he'll be there. If he's there, that's who they should draft. They should not be trying to trade both picks and move up to get Marcus Mariota. They should not use one of those picks to take a Sam Bradford so that Philly can go up and get Marcus Mariota. Because honestly, Philadelphia is the spot for Marcus Mariota. And for him to be successful, to get back into that system, that's where he needs to be. The Browns do not need to waste their time trying to get another quarterback, because honestly, as much as I was against them drafting Johnny Manziel, you still don't know what he has. You still don't know what his capabilities are. And it would just show that it was such a bad pick if you went out the very next year and drafted another quarterback. So for me, if he's there, Devontae Parker is my choice at 12.
Now, and what about 19?
19, if I'm looking at 19, I'm looking at you know, right now their defensive line is shaking up. You know, you have Phil Taylor in his last year. You lost to Taba Rubin. You don't have anybody as impacting on the defensive line. So there's a number of possibilities there. You can go with Randy Brown from Texas. Malcolm Brown, excuse me, from Texas. You can go at defensive tackle. You can go there. Or you can go on the offensive side of the ball and go offensive lineman because they, for whatever reason, they still keep talking about Mitchell Schwartz and how ineffective he is at right tackle, which I think is garbage. I still think he's a viable right tackle. I just think that they need to upgrade the guard position, but there's no, with Brandon Shreve off the board, to me, there's no, there's nobody to get there unless you go and get a right tackle like Collins from LSU, put him at right tackle and move Mitchell Schwartz in the guard. That makes sense. But for me, they still need weapons on offense. And they lost Jordan Cameron, who was a viable weapon before he had concussions and wanted to get out of Cleveland and all that stuff. So, I mean, you got Clive Wolford at tight end from Miami, and you got Max Williams, a tight end from Minnesota. Quite honestly, if either one of them on the board, I'm going to take one of those guys because they need weapons on offense for whoever the quarterback is. And they don't have a tight end. That's the, in my opinion, that's the area that they need to go to. So I would go with Max Williams out of the two.
And that's funny, man, because the Browns, they very seldom will they ever pick skill positions in the first round. They just haven't done that often. And I mean,
they struggle.
Exactly. And that's why their offense is garbage every year. So it would be nice if for a nice change of pace, they went ahead and got some skill position players that can actually impact the game instead of having to throw to Andrew Hawkins and Justin Gabriel 25 times a game. And I actually like those guys, but they're not going to get us to where we need to go, you know, at the end of the day. I think Andrew Hawkins is a great slot receiver, but you know what I'm saying? We need more than that. We need, especially with Josh Gordon out the picture, we need more than that. I wish last year I was with you on Bridgewater. In fact, Bridgewater, I said either Bridgewater or Manziel is who I wanted for the Browns, but my first choice was Bridgewater, and we were both there. The Browns could have had Bridgewater and Odell Beckham last year. It's mind-boggling
exactly.
That they it's mind-boggling that they screwed that up.
Mind-boggling.
But yeah, so this year, I mean, it'd be nice if they went ahead and did that. And it's funny, too, that the Browns went heavy with young running backs last year and didn't get a receiver last year when last year's receiving class was off the hook. And I think this year's running back class is off the hook, but they're not going to get a running back this year, I don't think. So we'll see how it all shakes out. That pretty much does it. We're out of time, man. If time flies by on the Mark draft, thanks for joining us this evening, Mark. Any last words real quick?
Yeah, the running back class, like I was saying before, you know, don't give up on them. And these two guys, Melvin Gordon and Todd Gurley, are the key to running backs being taken in the first round in the future. Their success will cause more GMs to not look at it with a jaded eye and try to bring some more running backs in there. So don't give up on that. And, you know, the quarterback class has been shaky at best for this draft. So after Mariota and Jameis Winston are gone, there really isn't a quarterback that's really worth drafting in the first couple of rounds anyway. So you might as well just, you know, take your lumps and try to go free agency or just, you know, stick with what you have. And in the Browns' case, they need to stick with what they have.
I'm on board with that. I also wouldn't be totally against the Browns taking a look at like a Bryce Petty in the later rounds. So that's something else that's out there. And I do think I'm on record. I do believe that the Eagles are going to try to trade up for Mariota. I do believe that that's going to happen. Thank you all for joining us. We are out of time, y'all. HipHopSportsReport.com is a website. Check us out on Twitter at HHS Report, hashtag Mark Draft. That's what we're doing right now. And on Facebook as well. And please subscribe and comment and rate the podcast on iTunes and Stitcher. Thank you all for joining us. We out of here. Peace.